Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's topic is nutrition, and we're going to discuss off-day nutrition. So what do you eat on your non-training days? So the question came from someone, and they were kind of asking a good general approach question. So I figured we'd do so, approach it in that manner as well. And we'll talk about differing goals, because whether someone's going for kind of fat loss or muscle gain or strength gain, there's a little bit of a difference. So typically fat loss people are wanting to get fat off. They want to maintain muscle, but they want to really just get some fat off their body. Then when you have somebody who's going for kind of aesthetics, meaning they're going for a lot of muscle, they don't want a lot of fat with it. They just want the muscle. So that's a very kind of controlled way of gaining weight. And then you have people who are more strength-based athletes, and they don't necessarily want to get fat, but they also don't really care if they have like six-pack abs and veins everywhere. Now, this is very cliche. You're going to have people, you know, from each of the goals who have a mixed kind of response or design or whatever they want from theirs. So you might have a strength athlete who also wants to stay lean. But that's generally the categories we're going to look at today, is fat loss versus like pure aesthetics versus I want to build muscle, and if I gain a little bit of fat, oh well. So if we look at like the order of importance of what matters in nutrition. So we've done a podcast way back when, podcast number 41, titled Diet Right, What Matters Most. That talks about the major components of healthy eating, whether that's for fat loss or muscle gain or strength gain. Kind of what are the biggest bang for your buck in terms of things that are going to make the most difference. So from that, we've talked about calories being number one, protein being number two, meal timing being number three, and then macronutrient quality or percentages kind of being the fourth component. So what this really means is that the most impact you're going to have from your diet is calories. The second most impactful thing about your diet is whether you have adequate protein. So somebody can have appropriate calories, but if all they're eating is a bunch of sugars and carbs, they're going to be kind of soft and pudgy. They're not going to have really good energy when they go work out. Their aesthetics isn't going to be maximized. They're also going to have more mood swings. They're going to have like energy swings. A whole bunch of kind of variables are going to happen throughout their day that if they were to eat an adequate amount of protein, it would kind of smooth everything back out. Okay? Then we also have, if you don't have enough protein, you're not going to recover very well from your training. You might have enough calories, but you don't have enough recovery-based calories, which is protein only. So our muscles can't repair themselves using carbohydrates. They have to have protein. So it's a big deal whether you have enough protein in your diet. And often people don't recognize it's so dang important. It's the second most important thing. The third most important, like we said, is meal timing and meal frequency. So before you worry about whether something's organic or not, you have to make sure. Oh man, early morning podcast, getting me. But whether you worry about something's organic or not, you have to first make sure that like you're eating the right amount of foods, right enough protein, you're eating kind of matching your daily activity levels, which is the meal timing, meal frequency. Then, and only then, would things matter whether they're organic or like wheat products versus white products and odds and ends like that. Okay, so let's go down through this. So the first thing we're going to look at is calories, because like we said, it's the most impactful. If your goal is fat loss, generally speaking, on non-training days, you are going to be less active. And that makes sense because you would burn calories when you train. So if you're not training, you're not burning as many calories. Now, if you have some kind of special circumstance where on non-training days you're super active, okay, congratulations, you're special. But still, take the concepts we're going to say here and kind of run with them and apply them yourself. So everybody does have a little bit of a different lifestyle. So I'm being a little bit of a jerk. But oftentimes I'll have somebody where I'll explain this whole thing, and then they're going to say, well, on my non-training days, I'm actually more active. And I'd say, okay, did you even listen to any of everything I just said, or did you just want to wait to tell me that? So here's your cookie, here's your merit badge, you know, here's your award, the most busiest person in the world on non-training days, congratulations. But did you actually listen to anything I told you? Did you take away anything? No, you just wanted to wait to tell somebody how special you were. So, lay off the specialness, okay? And let's just recognize that, generally speaking, on days that we're less active, we need to eat less. And that makes sense. So, if we're not burning as many calories, then we don't want to be taking in those calories, especially if our goal is fat loss. So what that comes down to is if I'm eating calories that I don't burn, I'm not going to be losing fat. So I could potentially be storing those calories because they're in excess. Or I'll just not be losing fat that day. So it kind of slows down your progress. So how I kind of handle this with clients is it depends on the client I'm working with. It depends on their adherence abilities to diets. So generally, we want to maintain the same calories is what I typically do with most general population type people. And that would seem counterintuitive. So if you're saying, okay, on non-training days, I'm less active and you're going to make me still eat the same amount. Well, how this works is in podcast 173, we discuss the need for caloric cycling during diets. And what that means is that you have to create a changing environment in the body so that way you don't get the exact same stimulus over and over and over and over. And the reason why is your body will start to change and adapt to that stimulus if it's repetitive. So I use the analogy, and I know I beat it to death all the time, but it's a really good analogy, is if you go and run a mile today, it's going to be awful. If you run a mile 100 times in a row, eventually that becomes more of like a warm-up day, and it doesn't feel as miserable. Your body has a chance to get used to it. While your body is getting used to running, it's actually becoming more efficient. So it's actually burning less calories each time you run a mile. And that's what's going to start to happen is if you have a very consistent day-to-day kind of activity and nutrition, your body is going to adjust to that, and it'll burn less and less fat per day as it learns how to manipulate and adjust down to that consistent caloric level. Now, I just told you that I typically don't change the calories, so how in the world am I getting variety when I know it's necessary, but yet if I don't change the calories? So, in podcast 173, we talked about that need for caloric cycling. And then in podcast 181, we talked about how to use muscle damage for fat loss. So when you lift weights, resistance training, not cardio, when you do resistance training, your body's requirement for calories actually increases after the session. And the reason why is your body has to repair all the damage that you just did during the training session. So your body's demands for calories went up post-training. But if we maintain the same calories, that changes the environment of what was going on in the body before we trained. So maybe before we trained, we were eating, I'm just making up numbers, by the way, so please don't follow these numbers. So say we were eating, we'll just not do calories, that way it doesn't seem as confusing. So say we're eating 10 units of food, and our body was needing about 11 or 12. So we're getting a little bit of fat loss there. Not severe, just a nice small amount of fat loss. So then all of a sudden we train, and our body has all this damage and stuff to fix and repair. So now maybe it needs 14 units of food, but we still only eat 10. Now instead of there being a 2-unit deficit, there's a 4-unit deficit. So what that means is the recovery period after our training sessions, we have a higher demand for calories when we don't put new calories in that equates to a higher amount of fat lost during that time. Our body burns off the fat. And if you make sure that out of those calories you are eating, there's adequate protein, your body will still recover from the training. It'll still actually kind of partially build new muscle here and there. So that's how we create cycling. By having the calories stay the same is using your training, your resistance training, as your caloric cycling. Now, if you don't do resistance training, you just do aerobic training, you are not getting the same effect. So if you keep your food the same and all you do is aerobic training, you're not changing the environment of the body very much, and your body will downgrade and it'll adjust to that, and you will stop to get results. So you will plateau. because you're not getting a changing stimulus. This is why oftentimes people start a diet, they start cardiovascular exercise, they get a result the first week, a little bit the second, maybe some the third, fourth not much, and then from there on, kind of nothing. Okay? And that reason why is because there's no cycling, there's no difference. They had just one continual stimulus they presented to their body, and then their body got used to it, and it kind of downgraded to that stimulus. So you have to use resistance training to create caloric cycling in the sense of what your body demands from calories. So you're not going to change the calories you're taking in, you're just going to change the calories your body demands. So this helps extremely well when you know how to manipulate this stuff, because most general population people have a hard time adhering to just even one normal style of diet. So if I say, hey, eat like this every day, they struggle to do that. Whereas when we work with our competition clients, in order to get them to maximum aesthetic, like peaking, making them look amazing, okay, when we do fat loss for diets, now to get them ready for on stage, we do usually have training and non-training day foods. So they'll actually have two up to three, and I've even had clients that had four different daily structures that they had to follow throughout the week, depending on the way they kind of handle things. So I'm very fortunate to get to work with other trainers. So I'll do their nutrition and training for competitions and their training, so that way they can focus on their clients. So I've had clients before who were trainers, and they might have, you know, a true off day. So no gym and no work. Then they'll have an off day where there's no gym, but they might have a lot of clients. So they're up and active, they're moving around, they're doing this and that. Then we have a general kind of a client day with upper body, which is a different amount of calories being burned or demand from the body, than a general active day with leg training, which is the highest demand for calories post-training. So they might have four separate structures that they have to follow throughout the week, but it's their dream, it's their goal, they want to get on stage, it's their passion because they're trainers, so they'll adhere to all that and they'll get it freaking right and they'll be perfect. So I've helped people get pro cards doing it this way. So for general population, like I said, if I gave you four different ways to eat, you're going to freaking go nuts, and it's going to seem overcomplicated, it's going to seem very frustrating, you're going to constantly wonder whether you're doing things right or wrong, you're going to always feel like you're kind of off and changing foods, changing amounts, and it just is too time intensive, energy intensive, mental intensive for most people. So for fat loss clients, we tend to keep the calories the same on non-training days, okay, when I'm programming for them, because we use resistance training to be our caloric cycling. Now, for the listeners of this, I would assume, and this is a big assumption, so feel free to be annoyed or disagree or whatever, but is if you're training yourself, you're probably trying really hard, but it's very different than someone writing a program for you that maximizes your potential per day. So when I write training programs for clients, I don't write it based on what they feel like that day. I say, hey, given your best abilities, this is what I expect from you every day. So they push themselves, they have very hardcore training, so they're going to have that big change in stimulus. So if they don't change their food, it's not that big of a deal. If you are not working with a trainer, and a very good aggressive trainer, you're probably going to the gym, you're trying your best, you are burning calories. But if you know, like, yeah, if somebody was standing there watching me, I could do better, you know, or if I had a program, I'd probably be a little more, you know, adherent to my rest times and stuff like that. So if you don't have maximized, truly maximized training efforts, I would say go ahead and reduce your calories on non-training days. So you might not have enough resistance training, residual recovery needs from your training sessions, that you'll be able to afford to leave your calories the same on non-training days. So you want to reduce your calories 5 to 10%. So somewhere in that window is appropriate. I can't give you, like, you know, 7.8% for everybody who's ever listened to this. But generally a 5 or 10% reduction is pretty safe. It's not going to be such a lower reduction of calories that all of a sudden you freak out and you eat everything under the sun the following day. So 5 or 10% is usually pretty good. That gives you a little bit of a reduction to account for the less activity level that day. Okay? So that's a good general approach for fat loss clients. Now, what about pure aesthetics where they're trying to gain some muscle? So they're trying to gain muscle, but they don't want to gain really any unnecessary fat. We still have the general concept that if it's a non-training day, you're probably less active. So our demands or our needs for calories are less on that day. However, like I said, it kind of depends on the style of training and the intensity of training you do. If you do very, very intense resistance training, and let's say this person is aesthetically, their goal is like max muscle, minimum fat, they're probably training absolutely minimum 4 days a week. They're probably training 5 days a week, if not 6 days a week. So they have a ton of residual muscle damage. So they can afford to leave their calories the same on non-training days. If that means there's a little bit above maintenance level, don't worry about it. It's going to re-excite your metabolism. It's going to help you restore glycogen. It's going to bring you back and have a good day when you start back into your training, okay? Now, if you are not maximizing your training in that way, you're only training 3 to 4 days a week, then you do want to go ahead and reduce your calories on non-training days, again, by 5 to 10%. You'll still build muscle on that day, okay? But you just won't have the excess that kind of converts over to body fat. So that helps. So then again, if we have competition style clients who want to do this stuff to the nth degree, even if they're in their off season, quote unquote, where they're trying to build muscle and minimal fat, we do different day formats. So they might have, you know, two or three different structures. So when I write nutrition programs for a lot of clients, some of them, like, for example, somebody might wonder, like, what the hell takes so long? But, like, if I got, like, a pure aesthetic client and say we're getting ready for competition, they might have three nutrition plans that I have to figure out and balance out depending on their activity levels. They might have a leg training day, an upper body training day. They might have an active off day, then a true off day. So for one person, I might be writing 6 or 7 plans per week. So that could be quite a bit. So that's where some of the time intensive stuff comes into play on my end, if you were ever wondering. So when you want to be perfect, everything has to be perfected. So when somebody wants to get on stage, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8% body fat, things have to get pretty damn precise for that to happen. So that's what we do, and we make that happen. So even in the off season, when somebody wants to build muscle and they're a competition client, that is when they're building their muscle. So if they want to compete, you know, in 6 months to a year, and they want to be able to show new muscle at their next competition, that's when it's built, not 12 weeks before the competition. So you can't just piss around your off season, you know, go drinking out with friends and, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't have a social life, but you can't just give no shits to your training and nutrition and then say, oh, I'm 16 weeks out from the show, you know, let me buckle down and see what progress I can make. No. The progress should have been made the whole damn off season, okay? And then what you're doing before the competition is you're whittling off the fat to see what progress you were able to make. You don't make the progress in muscle tissue in the last 12 weeks. Holy crap. So, that's for that. So then we have strength athletes. Again, you're generally less active on non-training days. So for these clients, the training volume kind of depends on what we do with their food. So if they're only training 3 or 4 days a week, we definitely reduce calories 5 to 10% on non-training days. If they're training more, we leave the calories the same, and we rely on muscle damage to create the cycling effect that we would like. So this is where it's fun to get to know all the rules, because since you know you need caloric cycling, most people are going to think they need to change their calories. Well, you can actually just use the recovery period post-training sessions as your caloric cycling. So you can change your demand for calories to create the cycling effect rather than actually taking in different amounts of calories. So when I program for clients, my clients will, if they listen to this stuff, they'll probably laugh about seeing some of these things being explained and realizing why they're doing certain things. We'll have often, if they're training upper body, like say lower body twice a week, they'll have one session that's very high volume based. It's a lot of activity, but they're underloaded activities, meaning it's an exercise that feels really hard under not that heavy of weight. It gets them burning a lot of calories, but it doesn't have a high residual recovery effect. But then they'll have the other session of the week where there's maybe not as many exercises, but of what they do is very heavy exercises. That creates more wear and tear and damage in the muscles, but also the joints. And then that actually creates a higher demand for caloric cycling. So they can have the caloric demand of off days, they can have the caloric demand of high volume days, and the caloric demand of low volume but really super heavy days. So they can have three waves of caloric demands throughout the week. So this is how we get caloric cycling, even though it looks like they eat the same thing every day. So I make it simple in just giving them one diet to do, and then I change all the training and do all the variety on my end because it's just easier for me to do it, rather than me creating one training style and then asking them to eat in three or four different ways. That's never going to happen. And also, if I know how to do it and accept the work on my end to make it easier for them, why the hell would I not do that? That just makes sense. So the next thing we look for is protein. We typically don't change protein. I have them eat the same amount of protein every day, all day, always. Just kind of works well. So that way, if there's ever a little bit of surplus, it goes towards muscle building. And then we try never to have really an under amount, because that means they're not maximizing their recovery of muscle repair and growth, and even joint repair. So you have to make sure you have enough protein and enough building block material so you don't get worn down and beat up, and you end up doing not bodybuilding, but body breaking. Okay? So we always want to be doing bodybuilding even if we're doing fat loss, because we're trying to build muscle as we lose fat. You're trying to build a better body. So you should always be doing bodybuilding, not body breaking. So one of the ways to make sure you don't break your body is to make sure you eat enough protein. So that helps our body kind of repair, helps it feel good, helps get rid of like nagging aches and pains, you know, other than like ones if you're doing bad training structures or too highly repetitive of movements or movements that don't match your body type. But nutritionally, you can control aches and pains and help with recovery by eating enough protein on non-training days. So what about fats and carbs? So fats and carbs are what we get our energy from. And in general, fats are slower digesting foods. Slower digesting sources of energy, and carbs are faster digesting. Sorry. So our podcast for fats is number 29. If I eat fat, will I get fat? And then 21 is carbs, and I think it's like good versus bad carbs, or you know, are carbs bad for me, something like that. So 21 is carbs, 29 is fat. So you can read a little bit more about those if you'd like, or listen to more about those if you like. So for fat loss goal, so if our goal is to maximize muscle, but minimize fat, we want more fats than carbs on non-training days. Since fats kind of digest slower and steady throughout the day, our energy will most likely be slow and steady throughout the day on a non-training day. We don't have a big spike of energy like that training session would represent. So if we're kind of like, you know, kind of milled out, just even killed throughout the day, we would like to have energy intake that matches that. And fats are a better pairing for that. So in general, people should focus on more fats than carbohydrates if their goal is fat loss. Now, if your goal is muscle growth, so maximum aesthetics, meaning you want as much muscle with as little fat as possible, typically, these people have to eat a lot of food, okay, to build that muscle. So if they switch to fats instead of carbohydrates and it kills their hunger level, and they have struggled to try to get their amount of food in, they want to go ahead and switch back to carbs and then just try to spread out their foods. So maybe they're used to having, you know, a bulk amount of carbohydrates around their training time. They're going to want to spread that out throughout the rest of the day now, rather than having that big, large amount whenever you're not having the activity amount at that time. So they can still stay with carbs if they like. They just have to spread them out. Then what about strength athletes where, you know, they want to build strength, a little bit of muscle, like, you know, don't care if they're super lean. We would still want to focus more on fats than carbs. And again, switch to carbs if you're having trouble getting your food in. So sometimes when people eat fats, their hunger dies and they have a hard time eating the amount of food they should eat. If you're running into that, it's more important to get your calories in, hence why it's the number one thing, calories. So it's more important to switch back to carbs to allow you to eat the right amount of calories so you're actually getting the muscle damage and repair and growth that you want. I mean, the muscle, not damage, sorry, that happens in the training, but you're getting the muscle growth and repair that you want. If you try to be a stickler and say, well, I can't have carbs on non-training days, and then all of a sudden you don't eat all the calories you should eat, you're falling behind. So you have to understand the priority of rules. So number one thing is I have to have my calories right. I let everything go to to make sure I can get my calories right. Once I get my calories right, I then want to make sure I get the right amount of protein. You know, then you look at meal timing and frequency, and then you look at whether you eat carbs or fats. So it is helpful, it is important, but not really as anywhere near as much as people think. So just because you had carbs in your off-training day does not mean you're going to get fat. It's absolutely stupid. So as long as you have your calories controlled, you know, you can eat just protein and carbs all day, and you'll be fine. You're not going to gain body fat if your calories are controlled. So carbs alone don't make you fat. It's how much of them you eat that makes you fat. Okay? So that leads into one of the questions I typically get is when people are kind of like they're fatter than what they'd like to be, and they're wondering why they're not getting leaner results. So typically I'll get like, oh man, I wonder if I'm messing things up on my off day. You know, maybe I need to fix that. Maybe I look at that. Maybe I need to address that. Well, first of all, what you want to look at is how well are you adhering to your diet on all days, not just non-training days. So if you look at non-training days and you're like, you know, oh, I can improve this, this, and this. Okay, and you only have one or two off days a week, that's not the big picture. Look and see what you're doing on your training days. If you have more training days than you have off days, look on your training days first. Make sure those are actually correct because you're doing those more often. So if there's a mistake in those, you're going to be like, that's what's holding you back. Not the mistake in the day you only take once or twice a week. So I would definitely look at adherence first before I would look at a specific thing on my non-training day. So we do have adherence-based charts. We have adherence-based charts. So you can, if you'd like, you can email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com and we'll send you a chart that helps you track your adherence. Then what you can also do if you feel like you need to be leaner or if you'd like faster results and leanness is to stay active on your non-training days. You can go for a walk. You can do some yoga. I mean, there's like 10-minute, 5-minute, 15-minute yoga things on YouTube you can find. You can do stretch routines. You know, just active recovery. Just be active. Go out. Do something. Don't want to do things that cause muscle damage. It's an off day. But you can do things that still just let you burn calories and be active. So just get up and move around. So it also helps you with recovery because you won't feel so tight all the time. But that's another thing you can do is just stay active. Okay? So, generally, you do need less calories on non-training days if it's a less active day. So you bring your calories down 5 or 10%, and then just be aware that when you're recovering from training, you are having a caloric stimulus there. So if you're a really hardcore trainer, you don't have to bring your calories down on non-training days. So your body's still going to chew up through calories as it recovers from your training. And then, in general, focus on slow digesting foods. So get rid of sugars on non-training days. You probably don't need them. So focus on more healthy complex carbohydrates and healthy fats. And again, podcast 21 is carbohydrates, 29 is fats. So hopefully this helped answer some questions. Apologize, I yawned so much. I didn't get a lot of sleep before this one. I had a very busy weekend at a client compete and kind of just making life work under less than optimal conditions sometimes. That's the way it goes. So if you guys don't mind listening to me yawn every now and then, I'll still do these podcasts and hopefully they're still helpful. So, but if you have any more questions about nutrition, I realized as I started talking about the caloric cycling effect by resistance training, so by not changing your calories, but actually by changing your caloric demand, that might be something new for people. So again, in podcast 181, we talk about using muscle damage for fat loss. So if that's a weird concept to you, if you have a hard time kind of like wrapping your head around that, go listen to podcast 181. It's just really helpful to know how many options there are to make things fit your lifestyle. So too often people think they're forced into like one style of eating. And if they can't make it work, then they're a failure or they're never going to be fit. That's absolutely not true. There are so many ways to work this stuff to make it work for you. So the more you know, the more you can figure out how to make this stuff personalized. Okay? Cool. If you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, Brutal Iron Gym. Also, if you like the podcast, please share it with family and friends. The more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you. The podcast is for you, so we know what you want to learn about. You can tell us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.